The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Bob Dio. Bob is engineering in the program, engineering and producing the program on the other side of the glass, and together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. We're at Thursday already, August the 8th, 2019. You're listening to 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. Have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We've got all of our programs there available for you, podcasts, 24-7 at buckmastershow.com, the live line number 790-2040. Any comments or questions you've had concerning our climate, now would be a great time to call in, because Dr. Zach Guido is with us for his, we try to bring him in every couple of months, at least quarterly, and he is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. I'm just so proud of this team we've put together of really more than two dozen experts in their particular field. Dr. Guido is the program manager and research scientist for the University of Arizona's International Research and Applications Program and research affiliate at the Climate Assessment for the Southwest at the UA Institute of the Environment. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Happy monsoon midpoint.
Yeah, this is, you know, when we booked you for this visit, I was trying to get the timing right. And so booking you was more under a traditional summer thunderstorm season.
That word's hard to apply to the monsoon, traditional, because they're all very, very different.
They are, but generally, if you think about a July 4th start, which is kind of probably been the average. Mm-hmm. When I booked you, and I always, people accuse me of booking too far out, but usually my guesses are pretty good. I thought, well, we'll be about a month into this, and by now everything is really greened up really well, and probably recorded 3 to maybe 4 inches of rain so far. You look at the numbers, and not only was July one of the hottest on record in Tucson, but without a day near the end of the month where I think we pushed close to an inch, we'd virtually have nothing in July.
Yeah, it was very sad because, as many people know, and probably think, the monsoon is an amazing time of year here in the Southwest. And we all sort of look forward to those big convective clouds and the amazing sunsets and the rain, quite frankly. And yeah, this year it has been so far a very below average monsoon season. So maybe just to give a little statistics. Statewide, it's come in, July was the 11th driest on record out of 125 years. So that's right. Pretty darn poor. And as you mentioned, it's been warm, and temperature statewide has been about, I think it's the 15th warmest on record. And those two things are related, because when you don't get a lot of rain, you get clearer skies, you get warmer temperatures. So it is kind of what you'd expect. When you look across the state of Arizona, something like 90% of the area is below 75% of average or less. So this is not just a Tucson thing. Mm-hmm. It's basically a Southwest thing. And then if you go even further south in New Mexico, which is really the core of the monsoon, it's struggling there. So if it's struggling in Sonora,
in our engine for these monsoons is northern Mexico.
That's right. We're on the fringes of it. Yeah. And so normally we sort of, even if Mexico is doing well with the monsoon, we can do not so well just because there's more variability up here. But if it's struggling in Mexico, it's certainly gonna struggle here. And yeah, it started, I think, here in Tucson. I think you have to go back to July 13th or 14th, when traditional definitions of the monsoon based on dew point were crossed. So yeah, so that started a week, 10 days later than what we would hope.
And close to the latest start ever, which is July 20th.
Yeah. So there we are. And happy midpoint of the monsoon. I was being serious. This is sort of the climatological midway point.
Yes, it is.
it's sort of all downhill from here. So that's not to say that we can't get some of the shortfall, we can't make up some of the shortfalls. But when you look at it across space, it's going to be really hard to make up a lot of the deficits in many areas. So we'll see. Well, you know, we'll hope. I mean, there's been some surprises in the past. You know, in September, we were more influenced by
hurricanes
or recurving remnant tropical storms. So that can also add some moisture to the region. And you know, in the next couple weeks will be important. I should also say that when you look at the next couple weeks, the sort of 8 to 14 day forecast, it's not looking too good. We're sort of under westerly flow, which brings dry weather. So I don't know. I'm not too optimistic that at the end of the day, this year's monsoon will come in above average. But it is interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, it is. And when you look at those averages of the temperature or the rainfall percentage, I've been kind of keeping track. Normally they're 15 to 20%, maybe 30% on a daily basis. In other words, it's really spotty. Are those percentages? Now, people might look at the newspaper where they say on the weather page about, well, year to date. Okay. We're about average year to date. And the only thing saving us there is we had a wet winter.
That's right. And that's a good way to look at it because, you know, we do rely here in the Sonoran Desert, we do rely on both, sets of, seasons for moisture and it is helpful if one is above average and the other but now we've got to look toward this upcoming winter. And so if we have a dry monsoon season, you know, puts a little bit more pressure on, you know, the winter to deliver. And there is talk now on from the U.S. National Drought Monitor of adding, you know, a drought picture back in Arizona, so that had gone away because of a recent string of good seasons.
That designation, we could go back into the drought category very quickly.
Yeah, it doesn't take long. I mean, that's the thing here in the Southwest. Just one bad season, and you know, our summer grasses are basically in tune to the monsoon. So, our water supply. There's a lot of droughts. A sort of a nuanced thing, and if you just miss one of those seasons, it's going to affect certain things. If you have a bad monsoon season, for example, there's more risk for fire. And if you have a wetter winter, that may delay the fire season a little bit, but it doesn't eliminate it completely. So, so we'll see. I guess the you know, our eyes are going to be looking for the next couple months and then toward the winter.
There is news from the National Hurricane Center in Miami. They just updated their forecast for the number of hurricanes for the remainder of the season. Of course, the season usually begins June 1st, goes through November 1. So we're not even halfway into that season, but they're now saying 5 to 9 hurricanes. Now, I think they're counting the Pacific side, don't they? Or is this just Atlantic?
Well, if it says Atlantic, it's just Atlantic because they usually treat...
I think it would be this is just Atlantic, yeah. Because they did say there's only one hurricane so far in the Atlantic. Now, this is up from 4 to 8, and they say the reason they've upgraded this is the end of El Nino. And I always get it confused. What does El Nino mean versus La Nina?
In terms of hurricanes?
Yes.
And El Nino affects, it can affect the sea surface temperatures, and it can affect the differential strength of the winds in the atmosphere, which, influence shear. And when you get increased shear, it tends to rip storms apart. So El Ninos, in the Pacific, they tend to, in the Pacific Ocean, I believe they tend to reduce shear. And so in an El Nino event, you are sort of have increased chances for increasing hurricane activity in the Pacific. In the Atlantic, it's usually opposite with shear. And so if it's a revised forecast to neutral, it is surprising that they've increased the forecast the number of hurricanes forecasted, but maybe there's other things going on. Like
they were talking about sea temperatures.
Yeah, that's another really important variable. The warmer the temperatures are, of course, the more evaporation you can have, and the sea surface temperatures are really what can fuel these tropical storms, keep them going, increase their size, increase their strength. So they're complicated, but you know, El Nino and La Nina do play a role. And I think maybe for the Southwest here, in the beginning of the season, the Pacific was forecasted for above average hurricanes mm-hmm. and tropical storms. Mm-hmm. I think only one or two has been present there, which is pretty low.
In the eastern area, now if you go to the central Pacific, they've had an unusual activity mm-hmm. where they had two hurricanes within about 10 days just south of mm. the Big Island of Hawaii.
Okay.
And those storms in the central Pacific, those hurricanes, traditionally they've been much further south of the Hawaiian Islands. Mm. Last year, again, they had hurricane activity, which hurricanes in Hawaii are rare.
And that's right.
So
it's hard to hit those small little islands.
Something's happening where they're moving. This activity has been moving north and then coming more in contact with the Big Island. We're going to take a break right now. The last time Dr. Zach Guido was with us, I had just returned from the Caribbean where I was complaining about this giant seaweed bloom that's been going on, and it's gotten worse, and Zach found some interesting research about what's going on with all the seaweed. I mean, places in Mexico have just been devastated. You're talking about Cancun and all that area, really affecting the tourism industry because it's not really appealing to... You go out and see these mountains of seaweed and it stinks to you know what out there on the beach. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit about that and kind of the big picture. It's been really a hot summer all over the globe, especially in Europe. We'll be back with Zach Guido, but right now I want to tell people, Zach, about my favorite bakery in town. That's Mona's Danish Bakery. You're always up for bakery goods, aren't you?
I love it. Go to Mona's.
Go to Mona's. Mona's located Swan and Sunrise up there on the northeast corner. And check it out. They're open now 6:30 in the morning for the breakfast. The grill will be all ready and fired up. They're doing such a nice breakfast there, Steve and the team. But right now, if you've had breakfast, you don't want breakfast, you want lunch, they're open right now. Have a great sandwich, maybe a brownie for dessert, and you're on your way. And MonasDanishBakery.com is the website. Also a link at BuckmasterShow.com, not only to Mona's, but all of our great partners that make our program possible. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice. We are your source for trusted news talk. We're talking about climate with Dr. Zach Guido of the University of Arizona. He's also the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. And I have some really scary headlines here in front of me. But maybe we should go with finish our discussion on seaweed. Then I can talk about some of these climate headlines, like water crisis may grip a quarter of humanity, walloped by heat wave, Greenland sees massive ice melt, front page of today's New York Times, the food supply is at dire risk, according to UN officials, options are dwindling, exploitation of land and climate change pose grave danger. Those are just...
I'm only laughing because these are really depressing headlines.
They are. They are very depressing.
Kind of have to make light of it just
so
to
So maybe
cope
we'll
with it.
Go back to the seaweed, which people think isn't really that big a deal. But for Caribbean nations, folks, you have these mounds. I've got a picture in front of me, this huge...
What do they look like?
Oh, my gosh. Just huge mounds of brown seaweed, and this one is in Delray Beach in South Florida. So it's not just the Caribbean, and it's a huge patch of what's called sargassum. That's what the technical name for seaweed is, stretching from West Africa to the Gulf of Mexico. Explosive bloom of seaweed is affecting marine life and tourism. More than 1 million tons of seaweed could arrive on Mexico's coast by Cancun this year. Not good. This article that you sent to me, the research seems to indicate, because they have a graph showing seaweed over the past 10, going back to 2011, and this last year's graph was really bad. I mean, there's only one year in that whole period, 2013, where it wasn't a problem. I guess it's the warming of the water, of the ocean, bottom line.
Yeah, I guess, this is
new
research.
It's a kind of a new area of
research. Yeah, and I think, what I gleaned from a couple of these articles is it's a relatively new problem. They're monitoring it. It's this massive seaweed patch is increasing. We've got good observations on it. Mm-hmm. And now it's about doing the science to figure out, what's it causing? And, you know, there's been some speculation on, well, maybe it's, you know, it seems to start off the coast of Brazil. So there's maybe some connection to agricultural runoff that's creating the algae blooms, or the seaweed blooms rather. So some people are speculating on what is the actual cause, because you're right. Like last year and probably this year, it's more so than the year before, which is more so than that year. And it does have impacts, particularly for those Caribbean islands, tourism, corals. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we've observed it, or not we, I haven't, but scientists have.
Yeah.
And now it's about figuring out what's causing it, and seeing maybe there is a climate connection. You know, just another impact that we can add to those headlines that you just read off. But
well, these headlines are really, I don't know, they're horrible. This thing in Greenland, massive ice melt. Mm. I heard a talk show host here on our station over the weekend that was attributing it to, I think he was saying, volcanic under the some kind of volcanic activity.
Right, so it's melting from below.
Yeah, melting from below. Yeah. That's what his contention was.
It's also melting from...
So I don't know if there's any truth to that.
Well, I mean, certainly you do get melt from below, from just the, it's called the geotherm.
Geothermal activity.
Yeah. But it's also melting from above. And when you look at the not just the ice on land, but also the sea ice extent, 2012 was the lowest in recorded history going back to mid-70s. And we're on trajectory for the lowest. September is the lowest. It's at its minimum extent. And then as the winter sort of progresses, it more sea ice grows. But it's also melting from above. So there's big changes in the Arctic. And I think that's, you know, when we switch topics from sort of weather variability from the monsoon and talk more about long-term change and climate change, you know, it's very easy, or it's easier to see the impacts of climate change in places like the Arctic, which are warming twice, two point something times faster than they are here. And you can visibly see changes in the ice margins, thawing of the permafrost and whatnot. But the Arctic, there's a lot of changes going on in the Arctic.
Well, the fires, massive fires in Greenland and Siberia, those are areas that it was unheard of to have these kind of massive wildfires. And that's been the case this summer.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in terms of fires, I mean, you know, in the long term perspective of this, there's, you know, fires are a natural way of forests to regenerate. And so they're always they're a permanent fixture naturally. The question is, well, are they growing in intensity and frequency? And when you have like natural sort of places like Siberia where there's not a lot of human influence, I mean, the records are not that long, so we can't talk about trends, but we can talk about it from theory. And you know, warming atmosphere, even if we don't know exactly what's going on with rain or there hasn't been trends in rain, the fact that the atmosphere is warming has an impact, and it sucks the landscape dry. And when you get naturally dry seasons, which happen, and you have warmer temperatures, you're just priming the landscape for an ignition if it can ignite. And then of course when you move toward more human altered landscapes, you know, the fire equation gets a little bit more complicated because, you know, people matter here and what they do, how they manage the landscape, how we're trimming the forests. Are we encroaching? Are we you know, even if you look at California's fires last year, it started from a power line circuit breaker failure, I believe.
Yeah.
And that was the ignition.
Uh-huh.
And you look here in the Southwest and, you know, half of our fires are started by people and the other half are started by lightning. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so then people adds a complicated question. And I think when it comes to these kinds of impacts that matter to people, we always have to remember that there is a climate part of it. I mean, it's intuitive because rain and temperature matters, but there's also a huge element of how humans manage the environment, which can either amplify risk, and in most cases has amplified risk, or dampen risk. And some of those headlines that you read off, like the water crisis,
yep,
those are human generated crises. I mean, there is a climate part to this, but I think there's an empowering message in there, Bill, and that is that it's not all doom. I mean, it certainly is a little bit gloomy, but we have the power if we can, you know, get behind causes and develop strategies that are more in line with, you know, our environment.
Was it Cape Town, South Africa, after a 3-year drought? Cape Town in 2018 was forced to take extraordinary measures to ration what little water was left. It would have been the biggest city in the world to actually go dry. And Los Angeles has had a similar problem.
Yeah, water is a real
big issue.
You
don't have to go that far. You don't have to go 10,000 miles or something down to Cape Town. You can look over to L.A.
No, and I'm sure most of your listeners are very familiar with water issues because that's the issue here in the Southwest. I mean, we've got one river that supplies 40 million people with a lot of water, and figuring out how to allocate it justly, and those kinds of issues is, and how do we use it, and how do we conserve it? You know, I mean, there it's from scientist perspective, these are really interesting topics to study, and they're really critical issues. So if there's any young listeners out there, this is, we need your brains on these thorny issues.
And one headline I did not bring up, but pretty darn important, especially if folks have been over in Europe this summer. Oh my goodness. Paris had the hottest temperature ever recorded. Many places in France, 110 degrees Paris. And a lot of folks do not have air conditioning in France.
Yeah, that's key, actually, because it's those that are much more vulnerable. They can't escape the heat.
Let's see if we can work one quick comment. One caller, David, would like to weigh in on water. Go ahead, David.
My comment is we, along with everybody else in the Southwest, got straws in the Colorado River, and you got more population growth and development in the Southwest, which means more straws in the Colorado River, and it's declining. And here in Arizona, we're undergoing a very rapid land transformation from xeriscape and Sonoran Desert to high water use housing developments. I went up to the Tortolito foothills. I was just absolutely aghast at how much desert's being scraped and turned into housing developments. Those housing developments require to be maintained, they require about 500,000 gallons per acre per year.
Okay, David, we're going to have to run, but what you said is very true about, I like the way you put it, so many straws in the Colorado River, and you take the states alone, and they've got a big straw, each state that needs water from the Colorado River.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be a crux. It's figuring out how to deal with all these multiple uses, how to deal with population growth, how to infuse technology into it so we can conserve water more, and basically just how to use this resource more sustainably.
All right. Dr. Zach Guido is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. He's from the University of Arizona, where he is an expert in climate. And just to summarize again, perhaps, let's put it this way, Zach, you're not that optimistic about a late summer, early fall kind of onslaught of rain here in the Southwest, and especially in Tucson. Unless, of course, that variable would be tropical storm activity in the Pacific.
Yeah, I guess I would say it like this. I'm hopeful, but I think it's going to be hard for many of the places to make up the deficits that they've incurred in the first half of the monsoon. So if I were to aggregate it over the whole at the end of the monsoon, I would expect that this would come in at a sort of a below average year.
It's hard to predict, but I'm hopeful. It's hard to predict, certainly, the winter rains. Those are very variable, very variable. Very variable. Yeah.
Highly variable.
Oh, highly variable. Zach, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, the Buckmaster Show, taking our mid-show break. David Safir, who writes and writes very well, a very articulate young guy, is waiting in the... David, I gave you a beautiful compliment there. A very articulate young guy. He's young at heart. David Safir is waiting in the wings. He will be next on the Buckmaster Show. David writing about education at the Tucson Weekly. And that's coming up after we take the mid-show break. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. From climate to education, that will be our topic for the remainder up until 1 o'clock today. We were talking about climate, and really July, very one of the warmest on record here in Tucson. So if you've had it with the heat, I got a suggestion for you. How about a 3-hour road trip over to Silver City, where it's going to be cooler? It's 10 degrees cooler at least because of the elevation over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a 3-hour drive, Southwest New Mexico. spellitout.org. Good starting place, because you'll find out about places to stay, places to eat, things to do, and there's all sorts of things to do. So maybe it's a road trip in your future. Let's welcome David Safir, who writes about education, does so very well. The Tucson Weekly, what they call The Range, and the reason they call it The Range, everything from A to Z is covered. And this is at TucsonWeekly.com. A lot of good information there. And David, it's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you, Bill. Always a pleasure to be here.
Pima County has fewer teacher vacancies this year. This is a huge turnaround. Not that we still don't have vacancies, because we do, and not that it's still a problem. It is, but it's a start.
It is. And before I go into that, because there are all kinds of ways you can approach that, all good, actually, I just want to mention to people, school started, I know, here in TUSD Thursday. And when you think about education, I know if you have kids in school right now, you think about that kid in that individual school. But for the rest of you, I just want to remind you that when the 40,000 odd students in TUSD go to school, they don't go to the administration building, and they don't meet the superintendent. So the superintendent isn't the education of the district, and they don't sit in on boring school board meetings either, and the school board members are not the district. I'm an old teacher. I learned I was a young guy a few minutes ago.
Well,
but I am
tell
an old
a young
teacher.
Guy. I think of you as young in spirit.
I like to think
there
myself that way, too.
Okay,
but
ahead.
I taught for 33 years, and I always thought that the basic unit of education is the classroom, mm-hmm. a teacher with a group of students. And so when you think about it, think about not about the superintendent or the school board or even the principal, all of which are important, but let's go where the rubber meets the road. And where the rubber meets the road is about 2,000 or so, a little bit more, teachers meeting with 40 to 45,000 students in TUSD and more in all the other districts. And that's where it's happening. The teachers are, by and large, dedicated people, by and large, good professionals who, when, like me, they look in their students' eyes and their students are saying, feed me, give me some education, give me something, you feel impelled to do it. People are doing what they can with what they, you know, with their own knowledge and abilities and the students who are in front of them, every one of which is a different little entity who has to be dealt with individually. At the same time, you have 25, 30, 35 other individual students to deal with. So
what
it's a
was your what was your relationship with the students' parents as a teacher? What role do they play in the picture?
Well, I'm going to say that I was a high school teacher.
Oh,
and remember,
okay.
When you have teenagers, teenagers don't want to talk too much to their parents,
right.
And their parents just kind of fold their hands and pray that everything is going to be going well
right.
with them. But when I had relationships with parents, you know, teacher's night or something like that, I generally got very, very, very good feedback. And on the occasion that I had a problem with a student, when I called them or talked to them, you know, met with them with a counselor, it went well. That's an important connection, but I would say it's vital when the kids are elementary school age, and to some extent the teachers are surrogate parents. You know, I every teacher, especially when they're young, has had their kid call one of the students call them mommy or daddy by mistake and then blush when they did that. But that's what's going on. There's that kind of a parental relationship.
What's going on with the teacher? Why are the teacher vacancies fewer this time around? What's at the heart of this? Is it money, increased money? What is it?
Well, increased money is a big deal. This is from the Star article, and the Star article says in Pima County as a whole, the number of vacancies are down 19%. Let's round that up to 20%. That means there's one in five fewer vacancies, and that's a big deal. In TUSD, I did the math in terms of the story, it's more like 26% down, which means one in four less vacancies. It's Sunnyside, it's 31% decrease. So things that a decrease is good in this case because that means more teachers. When you have in TUSD about 22 more teachers than you had last year, you have about 500 or 600 students who have a permanent teacher as opposed to a substitute who comes in or somebody helping out, and that's terrific. And yes, Bill, money matters. As a teacher, you know you're not going to make a whole lot of money, but you hope you're not taking a vow of poverty. You know, you're not going into a religious order where you're taking a vow of poverty. You go home and you want to put food on the table and you want to be able to go to a movie and go out to dinner and get decent clothes.
Maybe
and
take a vacation occasionally.
And for your kids, you know, teachers are parents with their own children. And it's something that you need to have enough money for. Well, Arizona is still at or near the bottom in teacher salaries, still with the increase, but the increase is better. And if when you're a teacher and you say, well, I know this year I'm getting a little bit more money than I got last year, and you also know, since it's a three-year program, I'm going to get a little bit more next year, I don't know for sure in terms of that number how many new teachers there are, how many teachers didn't bail, because a huge number of teachers bail before their third or fourth year and say, well, I'm going to stay here. I think the money is going to be better. And how many have decided, well, maybe I won't retire early. There's a lot of attrition within the district. So it's a combination of those things. And I think there's one more factor that's got to be remembered here.
What's that?
Teachers are human beings, and like everybody else, frail human beings. And as a teacher, you're always insecure about what you're doing. You never know if you're succeeding, and success is always a relative thing, and you like to get positive feedback. Well, right now, more than has been in maybe a decade or 20 years, people in this country seem to be positive about teachers in public schools. And all of a sudden, teachers are getting a little bit of a feeling of specialness, of being important again. And also, you know, the Red for Ed movement, they said, we can make a difference, not just in our classroom, but we can really move the needle. And those things are so important. I'll tell you just an anecdote from my life. I started teaching in the 70s, and for the first 15 or 20 years, I would meet something, we'd be talking casually, so what do you do, Dave? They'd ask me, and I say I'm a teacher, and their eyebrows would go up with a bit of respect. What do you teach? Oh, I teach high school. Oh, man, you teach. That must really be. And then what's the subject? And I say, I teach English. And then the first thing they always say is, well, I better watch what I say.
Right, I better watch it.
Which is not true, because I'm not a member of the grammar police. But still, I would get that kind of positive feedback. And I would come away feeling a little bit better about that. Starting the mid-80s.
That's what I was going to say. When did things change?
It stopped. Mid-80s, early 90s, I would say. I'm a teacher, and the look on their face would be, oh, another failing teacher in another failing school, huh? And then they would talk to me about, the schools aren't doing so well, are they? And they talk to me about, teachers have too much vacation. They talk. In other words, they would throw at me all of the things that they're hearing, and I literally felt that my status in society had gone down a couple notches. If I was a beginning teacher and that was happening, and I say, I'm working for too little money with too many kids, with not enough supplies, and now people are dogging me about what an awful person I am and how terrible the education is.
You tend to get out of the business.
I'm getting out of here. I don't need this grief. And so I think that's really very important. The fact that things are turning, the fact that teachers with Red for Ed here and around the country are feeling their oats, so to speak, feeling like they are a more powerful force, that kind of empowerment is a big deal. So all those things are coming into play here.
All right. When we come back after the break, David Safir writing about, he's been doing a lot of writing about the myth busting, these people that have been trashing TUSD. We'll talk with David about that on Buckmaster on 1030 The Voice, trusted news talk here in Southern Arizona. We'll be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, FlowersRieger.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by my favorite nursery in town. They've got all of your plant needs on a 13-acre site over on River Road. It's Green Things by the Rito River. And they're also home to Zocalo. Zocalo for years was over by Country Club and Broadway. Had a very nice store over there, highly respected. Well, they've moved. They're now part of the Green Things family over at Green Things. So you can get all your plants and some great furniture and handmade items from Mexico, all over Latin America. There's some great European items as well. So it's a really nice destination over there by the Rito River. GreenThingsAZ.com. David Safir is with us. David writes about education at TucsonWeekly.com under their section they call The Range, which is very prominently located. When you go to TucsonWeekly.com, you can't miss it. Ingrid would like to ask David a question before we get into TUSD. Go ahead, Ingrid.
Okay, well, when Red for Ed slogan first came out, there was a lot of talk about supplies and stuff. And it was stated that the teachers are allowed only a certain number of pieces of paper for the year, or for a six-month period or whatever, five-month period. I'd like to know, are the secretaries, are office personnel also allocated only a certain quantity of paper?
I don't know. Let's see if David knows.
I can't tell you exactly how it's allocated because I've never taught in this district and I'm not there now and I don't know what's going on exactly on the ground. But all I can say is it is a crying shame that people have to get only a certain amount of paper because your copy machine is your friend when you're a teacher to run things off. And if you don't have enough, teachers have to bring boxes of face tissues, of nose tissues from home. You know, it's crazy because there's so little money. I just saw something, I didn't have a chance to read it, about the amount teachers spend of their own money for their classrooms, and Arizona ranges near the top of the amount of money spent per student by teachers from these lowest in the country salaries, because like I was saying before, teachers love their students and teachers hate to deny them anything, and teachers are going to dig into their own meager paychecks and bring stuff to school. It's just it's part of the job, which is a horrible thing to say. We've gotten more money in terms of salaries, but and that's not much. We're still low, but we haven't gotten more in terms of the capital type stuff to speak of. It's
Bob Dio put the mic in front of you there. Did you hear you've heard similar things you were saying?
Oh, absolutely. I have. Yeah. My sister's retired from TUSD, so she spoke about this back in the late 70s and 80s. But I was just speaking with a TUSD teacher the other day. She said, I need to run up and get my supplies. And I said, are these your supplies? She says, yes, I'm paying for all these.
Oh, boy.
I hear it all the time, though. You must too, David.
Listen, everybody out there, I'm not going to actually use the phrase hug a teacher, but if your kid is in school, figure out a way if that kid likes something in the class to tell the teacher he or she really likes the way you do whatever it is. The teacher will be so grateful you can't believe. I remember almost every compliment I got from from a parent in my 30 years. If you're not there, if you see a teacher, don't simply say thank you for your service. Talk about some time when teachers were really important to you and how important you think that person is.
It doesn't seem like
it's that much. Yeah. It matters so much.
Wow.
It really does.
Talk about a teacher who is very influential in your life, and we've all had those, so that's a very good suggestion. David, you've written a couple of articles recently at TucsonWeekly.com about TUSD and maybe misimpressions about our largest school district.
Well, yeah, I think the TUSD gets a bad rap in the city beyond what it deserves. And far be it for me to say it's a perfect district or it's not a flawed district and doesn't have all kinds of problems, because it does, like every school district in the country. But it doesn't deserve the wall-to-wall bashing that it seems to get from people when I talk to them, including people who have kids in schools, people on the left, people on the right. It get the media. Right now, we're blessed with a very, very good reporter at The Star, a woman named Danielle Camara, who's writing about education. And she and I have talked. She was at The Weekly before this. I know her and know her writing. She's just excellent. And she's going to do a good, fair job. But often that's not true. And it's incorrect to say that TUSD is responsible for all the problems it has. And it's hard not to think they do. Listen, over since 2000, TUSD has lost approximately 900 students per year.
Right.
That means it's lost 16,000 students. It's gone from about 62,000 to about 44,000. I don't know if I have the math exactly right, but something of that nature. And that's hard to see because it's very difficult for the district. And the first thing you've got to think is, well, there's got to be something wrong with the district. Well, I went back and did some exhaustive research. I got information on enrollment from the district. I got information from the state. I looked up Tucson population numbers and their demographic numbers and things like this. If you look at the number of charter schools in the state, you put a proportion of those in TUSD, that's going to pull 10,000 students just there if they have exactly the same draw as charter schools elsewhere. If you look at something else, which is called open enrollment, which allows someone who lives in TUSD to take their kids up to the Catalina Foothills or over to Vail or Amphire or wherever they want to take them, that also is going to drain a district like TUSD because TUSD has changed into what's known as a majority-minority district.
Right.
In other words, it's more Latino than it is Anglo or anything else. And what's happened around the country, this isn't special to TUSD, it's not even worse here than it is in other places. Since the 60s on, there's been this thing called white flight, where people saw, white people, Anglo people, saw that the district, or the schools rather, and the cities were becoming more minority, and they said, I better get out of here.
And they go to the suburbs.
Sure. And they set up districts like, say, Catalina Foothills, if
right,
you have enough money.
Right, right.
And Catalina Foothills, you got all kinds of parents who are just like you if you're middle to upper mm-hmm. income, mm-hmm. and the kids come from the same kind of families, mm-hmm. and they tend to be the same color, though not all mm-hmm. of them are. And people have done that like mad. I just said 16,000, something like 16,500 students less in TUSD now than there was in 2000. Well, I looked at the numbers I got from TUSD. Since 2000, there's 16,000 less Anglo students. That's a phenomenal number.
It really is.
If you look at it, that's where the fall has been. And, you know, you could say, well, TUSD is doing a terrible job. You know, why would all these Anglo students leave if they weren't? Well, part of it is that you're looking for what, and I'm putting this in quotes, the best possible education, the education that's going to give your kids the best leg up, get them into the best college. And it feels like a school in Vail or Cat Foothills or even Anfire or Marana might do a better job. But if you're going to blame the district and the fact that more minorities are moving in, it's really the rough equivalent of saying when an African-American family moves into a block and people say, oh, geez, I better get out of here, and they put up a for sale sign. Well, you could say maybe the African-American family was responsible, but the people who carry the real onus, the real, I don't want to quite say blame, but the real responsibility for it are the people who see that and pick up and leave. So Tucson district has changed a great deal, and here's one of those statistics that I got, and I'll stop at this point, and that is that in 1960, if you look at Tucson, the city of Tucson, it was 80% Anglo, 18% Latino. 80% Anglo, 18% Latino, 4-1 Anglo. Right now, it is 37% Anglo, 50% Latino. The numbers have changed dramatically.
Wow.
So the city is different. The district is different.
All right, David Safir, thank you very much. David, we'll look for your visit in September. Thanks, David.
Well, thank you.
On behalf of David Safir and Bob Dio, engineer producer, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening.